Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, isn't there just something delightfully intoxicating about the notion of a lost world, a lost continent, a lost city?
Yeah, I mean, especially in this day and age where everything is mapped out. You have GPS, you can zoom to nearly any street and take a gander. The idea that there is this continent out there undiscovered, or perhaps once known and now just unknown to us again, just ripe and ready to be discovered, is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, when we were talking about H.P. Lovecraft in a recent episode, we talked about his novella At the Mountains of Madness, which is written in a time when man is on the cusp of exploring the last unknown, Antarctica. And Lovecraft injects his fiction and places some the ancient remnants of a primordial alien civilization there. And in a sense, he was investing our last hopes for something undiscovered on this world in that place. We love the idea, if there's not something undiscovered out there in the present, then maybe there was something in the past that we've lost. And failing that, hey, well, we'll just look to the future and dream something up there.
Well, I feel like he was tapping into something anyway, in this idea that there are cultures so very ancient and civilizations so very different from us that they did seem or might seem alien to us. And especially if you think about all the artifacts in that novella that they come across, the ancient writings or drawings and things that we discover today when we're trying to figure out how people worked in the past. So it is this idea that this lost continent could give us another angle, another lens into humanity and what ultimately helped to create us and where we are today.
And certainly, even just within known history, there are plenty of places and times it's very difficult for us to wrap our heads around. Like it's been pointed out to me before that the religion of the ancient Egyptians, for instance, it never really took off beyond ancient Egypt because it is very difficult for an outsider to sort of wrap your head around these concepts and what exactly they were going for.
Which I think makes it even that more romantic, these notions that these lands could have existed, these utopias where, you know, people were incredibly strong, and the societies were wealthy, and they were technologically advanced. This idea that this could have existed. And I'm even thinking about El Dorado, which is, you know, a perfect example of the sort of romantic version of society, but also this idea that all these treasures exist and you just need to go find them and plunder them. And El Dorado is the famed city of riches that 17th century European explorers were trying to find in South America, with all sorts of fantastical stories of, you know, this Indian chief covered in gold and all sorts of gems and rubies just there for the taking. If you can find the city.
Indeed. One of the sources we both read for this particular episode, an article by L. Sprague de Camp titled Lost Continents, which was published in National History Magazine. You can find it online. He pointed out that, you know, as we've been saying, we love this idea of utopia. We love this idea that there's some lost land somewhere that captures perfection. Our world sucks, but surely we got it right at some point, or we will get it right at some point in the future. He says that we used to situate these Edens and golden ages in the remote past or in some unexplored portion of the world, but now we're forced to place them on other planets or in the distant future. So one day maybe we'll get there. But failing that, of course, we fill our fantasies. We fill our dream worlds with these various places. So I think we've already mentioned a few, but just some of the writers that come to my mind when we think about lost worlds. Lovecraft, of course. Clark Ashton Smith wrote whole cycles of short stories set on the lost continent of Hyperborea, on the future continent of Zothic, and on the last shard of sunken Atlantis known as Poseidonis. J.R.R. Tolkien wrote of Numenor, which the Tolkien fanatics will probably correct me on that, and the pronunciation of Tolkien's name. But I grew up saying Tolkien, so screw it.
There you have it.
But this world is another one, that a fictional world fell into darkness, sank beneath the waves. Thomas More's Utopia, 1516 classic.
I also am remembering this chapter in Ken Jennings' book, Maphead, in which he talked about this law professor, Austin Tappan Wright, who died in 1931, but he left behind something like 2,300 handwritten pages describing and mapping this fictional country in his mind called Islandia. And decades-long fever dream for him, right? You know, and this is beyond the sort of scope of his work that he did in his daily life. So this is what he did in the mornings and when he got home from work. And it detailed everything, the population, the culture, the languages. And again, here's this idea that we can't help but storytell when we think about distant lands, real or imagined. I mean, this is something that really takes hold of us.
I'm glad you mentioned Maphead, because that really cuts down to two of the key features here in discussing lost continents and lost worlds. On one hand, the mapping of our world, as we'll roll out as we continue in this conversation. A lot of this stems from our attempt to understand the shape of our world, the layout of our world, where the continents are, where various islands are, and then misinformation, theories, hypothesis here and there, and a lot of dreaming. We get into the theory of what may exist gets picked up by and transformed into the desire for something to exist.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I was thinking about this. You have maps that are physical maps and you have allegorical maps.
Yes.
In the same way, you have the same kind of stories, right? You have some that are allegorical stories, and then you have some stories that may be rooted in historical fact. And I'm thinking about the city of Troy, which was written about by Homer in the fictional poems Iliad and Odyssey. And it turns out that the city of Troy was a city that is located in modern-day Turkey. And the Trojan Wars may actually have happened. So you have all of this sort of tinging these ideas of history and legend, and no more so than the idea of Atlantis.
Ah, yes. And I do want to say, a place like Troy, it instantly makes me think of any number of places that have an important role, both in real history, as well as in fiction, as well as in religion and myth. And some individuals want to really only take one of those, or want to combine them all into a single thing, but I really feel a place like that, like Troy, it kind of exists in a, like a quantum superposition, you know? It is at once a real place and it is this fantasy place, and these things are not necessarily connected. You can't necessarily overlay them, like see-through panels in a book and expect to see a concise image.
Yeah, it can be dual nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And indeed, Atlantis, the big one, definitely falls into this category as well.
Well, the thing about Atlantis, though, is that it's widely seen as an allegorical story.
Yes.
Right.
In the time that it was written, in the present, but we just can't help ourselves.
Right. For all the reasons that we just ticked through. So when we talk about the story of Atlantis, we're talking about the lost city, and you can't have this actual story about Atlantis unless you talk about this other city, this Athenian city that existed in the story at the same time. This is huge empire that was organized along the lines that Plato had set forth in his Republic. And the state was ruled by a communistic military caste. And everybody was brave and handsome and virtuous, kind of like Garrison Keillor's.
Oh, yeah,
where
the women are strong and all the children are good looking.
Yeah, something like that.
Lake Wobegon as Atlantis. New theory.
Garrison Keillor needs to write that episode for Lake Wobegon. But its rival city, of course, was Atlantis. And this is an island west of the Pillars of Hercules, larger than North Africa and Asia Minor combined, right? So just landmass-wise, huge, right?
Yeah. And this was written 355 BCE. And he's saying this was 9,000 years ago from 355.
Right. In 355, he was like, hey, this happened 9,000 years ago, which kind of is a red flag anyway, right? We'll discuss why.
This is long ago in a galaxy far, far away, basically.
Yes, you're right. But basically, this continent had all sorts of great power. It had tried to conquer the eastern Mediterranean, but had been defeated by the Athenians. And up to this point in the story, we get all this background on Atlantis and how it was an advanced society.
But there are no flying planes, no laser guns. They have a really fancy bronze-like metal that shines like the sun. But that's pretty much it. Plato doesn't lay out anything else sci-fi about.
They have fancy architecture and art.
Yeah.
Fancy pants, okay? But at this point, you have a great earthquake that devastates this Athenian city and Atlantis. And along with it, you then have the flood swallowing it, or you have Poseidon mandating that these floods swallow these cities whole.
Right, because it's also laid out in Plato's work that that Poseidon puts his 10 sons in charge of Atlantis, and that's how Atlantis gets kicked off with to begin with.
Yeah.
The charter, if you will.
Josh Clark has an article about an Atlantis article on How Stuff Works, and he says, Plato loses some credibility when he mentions that the city was also populated by blood descendants of the sea and earthquake god Poseidon.
Yeah.
I tend to agree with him.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to try and take Plato seriously. But it's like if you read J.R.R. Tolkien and said, this Middle Earth thing is just completely made up. I tried to find it on a map. I couldn't. I worked really hard. I came close a couple of times, but it just doesn't pan out. Of course it doesn't pan out, because Middle Earth does not really exist. It exists as a fiction. It exists, you could argue, as an allegory for Europe during the Second World War, etc. But
wait a second. I saw that documentary, Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yes.
It exists.
Well, New Zealand exists, and we'll actually discuss New Zealand a little bit in part two of this episode.
Yeah, the perfect setting, really, for Lord of the Rings. And the perfect setting the idea of a lost continent, right, has all the elements. All right, but there are two remaining points to hit here. And one is that the fact that nobody in Greece for 9,000 years had mentioned a giant battle between Athens and Atlantis.
Yeah, except for Plato's tale and various commentaries by his successors, there's not another surviving word about Atlantis in the Greco-Roman, Egyptian, and Babylonian canon of literature.
Which is a little suspect.
Yeah. And again, everyone knew in Plato's day that this was fiction, this was allegory. Those who came after him knew it. But as L. Sprague de Camp points out, critical standards in the later Roman Empire degraded, and some began to take the tale seriously. And that's kind of the beginning of what would later pick back up in terms of re-examining Atlantis and thinking or wanting it to be true.
Even though, and this is the second point, Plato was a philosopher, not a historian.
Right.
So he wrote on an allegorical level.
Yeah, but he's Plato. He's a big name. So,
yeah.
You know, especially as the centuries roll by, there becomes this, there's more of a tendency to want to take what he says really seriously. And if he's talking about mysteries, all the better, right?
Do you think Oprah will have that sort of power? And I always ask this, don't I, in some fashion. In 200 years?
Yes. Yes, people will be rereading the works of Oprah, looking for the lost works of Oprah.
And her disciples, Dr. Phil, Dr.
Yes.
Oz,
yes.
Susie Orman. All right, let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about some of the people who are trying to get at the bottom of whether or not Atlantis could have ever existed.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. Let's talk about some people who have looked at this fascinating idea of, I guess it's sort of like archaeology meets history meets geography meets could Atlantis have existed?
Yeah. Yeah, this is where it gets even more interesting, because after about the 6th century, you didn't really hear much about Atlantis for a long time. Until you reach the beginning of the European Age of Exploration during the 15th century. So we're out there, we're exploring the ocean, and we are in fact discovering new lands. But, and then of course we're mapping our ways too, but just as our maps were populated by many a non-existent creature, which we've discussed before, talking about the science of sea monsters, so too do non-existent islands pop up throughout the Atlantic, especially the Atlantic.
So in some ways, you're on the cusp of discovery, right? Mm-hmm. And you have these large swaths of undiscovered land and oceans. And so it would make sense that people would try to say, I think that I have found where Atlantis went under.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Then you have a sect of these people who you might consider scientific Atlantists.
Yes, and this also picks up a lot when we discover America, because, oh my goodness, here is a world, and it has people living on it who we've never discovered before. So that's even more fuel for the fire, right? And in fact, some would end up saying, hey, America is the Atlantis.
And, well, it's not.
Yes, L. Sprague de Camp divides Atlantis enthusiasts or Atlantists into three categories. Mm-hmm. The scientific, the pseudoscientific, and the occultist.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start with the scientific, because that's the reasonable place to start. And really, it's kind of a progression, right, as you sort of drift off a little more from having a firm grasp in reality.
But it's trying to be rooted in reality. It's trying to be rooted in data, but then sort of drifting off. I was thinking about this, that cognitive bias.
Yes.
That we sometimes experience when we're trying to create that picture that we want to see.
Yeah. You sort of like the scientific Atlantis are saying, could it be true? Let me see. Here's my theory about how it could be. And then the pseudoscientific, the desire for it to be true takes over. And then with the occultist, just any other nonsense you might have lying about the house gets thrown into it. Your
They're
fantasies.
The most fun, though.
They're the most fun, yes.
Yeah.
So, yes, for scientific Atlantis, they are, again, they're looking for an ancient culture that could have possibly inspired Plato. And they're not necessarily even getting into the whole worry over an actual Atlantic island or some sort of large landmass sinking into the ocean. So in 1679, Olof Rudbeck supposedly found Atlantis in Sweden, and then subsequently other individuals found Atlantis in Tunisia, in Nigeria, in South Africa, and just about everywhere else, right? The best theories that have been put forth regarding the location of Atlanta tend to put it in Minoan Crete or in Tartessus, which is a harbor city and the surrounding area on the southern coast of the Iberian Peninsula that was abandoned to floodwaters, most likely before the Common Era. Meanwhile, the Eastern Mediterranean Minoan Empire really did suffer overwhelming disaster around 1500 BCE. And this was a Bronze Age power that flourished from the 27th century BCE to around the 15th century BCE.
So that's an example of scientific Atlantis. Now you have pseudo-scientific Atlantis, and a good example is Augustus Le Plongeon.
I'm glad you tackled that one. You have more of the French tongue.
Anyone who is proficient in French may take issue with that, but okay. I tried. Let it be known I tried. He spent a lot of years in the Mayan ruins of the Yucatan. He became quite an expert. He claimed to understand the Mayan alphabet, and he considered Egyptian hieroglyphics similar to the Mayan, and he claimed to be able to sort of sort all of this by using a modification of something called Brasseur de Bourbouche's modification of a Delanda's alphabet. So all of those words just falling out of my mouth, mm-hmm. I think already gives you an idea that this guy was completely obsessed. No doubt he was a scholar, but he was carving things together in such a way that he was really, really was world building and doing it with language.
Yeah, and I think world building is key here. Yeah, because he's taking what he knows about Mayan culture and then he's connecting it. He's forming connective tissue to not only the real ancient Egypt, but to this imagined Atlantis and just stitching together a world anew.
Can you imagine him living today and tackling like the moon landing hoax?
Oh, yeah. He would have a huge following online, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things that continually amazes me looking around at a variety of topics, not just this one online, is just how much material there is out there supporting just bad theories, bad ideas about, say, how recently the dinosaurs went extinct, or where Atlantis is or was, or just it's a little depressing at times.
Well, I think it speaks to this idea that humans have to chew on something.
Yeah,
and sometimes, and a lot of the problem here is that our experience is so subjective that it's hard to say, well, this is the thing. Although it's actually not that hard. In fact, you can take scientific data and help yourself guide yourself into the right area of exploration. Nonetheless, we are world builders. We are storytellers and we got to chew on something.
I found an hour long, amateur documentary on YouTube the other day where a man was arguing for the recent existence of dinosaurs based on evidence in the Bible. But here's the thing. He didn't seem to have any other point, but there are dinosaurs in the Bible. He wasn't trying to push any kind of like new, young mm-hmm. Earth kind of a model. He wasn't trying to disprove evolution. He was just saying, hey, there are dinosaurs in the Bible, and here's an hour of me talking about it.
Because for him, that is the thing that obviously is problematic.
Mm-hmm.
And if he could just figure out how dinosaurs fit into this, then all of it would make sense. Again, you have the cognitive bias at play that when
That's
you
true.
Are faced with something that really refutes the data in front of you, you will double down and find a way to make it fit.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Speaking of pseudoscientific Atlantis, another individual worth mentioning is Paul Schliemann. And Paul Schliemann is actually the grandson of Heinrich Schliemann, who actually dug up Troy. We mentioned earlier about the finding of Troy and realizing that Troy is a real place in addition to, you know, whatever else it might be in the popular mindset of man. But, yeah, 1912, Paul Schliemann, gave the New York American magazine a sensational tale about how his grandfather had left secret papers instructing him to break open an owl-headed vase, and supposedly there were Atlantis secrets inside. But nothing ever came of that. No vase was ever presented. No documents. So, but it added just a little more fuel to the fire.
All right. The last category here would be, as you mentioned before, the occult. Atlantis. And these really are the people that are going to bring the life to the party here.
Yeah, with occultist Atlantis, and occultist doesn't just mean, I know it brings to my mind images of individuals in dark cloaks meeting in secret rooms and discussing Atlantis, but really we're talking about here is just any additional crazy idea, conspiracy theories, fictional imaginings, you know, the same kind of energy that would go into rectifying the Old Testament with modern paleontology. That's the kind of energy you're getting here. So you're getting everything from, you know, ancient airplanes sailing through the skies of Atlantis to, you know, magical powers, bisexual Lemurians, astral bodies. You name it, it's going to wind up in this version of Atlantis and Atlantis thought.
It gets super cosmic
on
this level. You could trace some of this new life breathed into the legend to someone named Ignatius Donnelly, who penned Atlantis, the Antediluvian World.
And which means before the flood.
Before the flood. The flood.
Yeah.
Because there have been many floods.
In the big flood, the big biblical flood.
Yeah, that one. So we're talking about 1882, and Donnelly argued that small islands have disappeared in eruption, so why not a continent? So this is his place of logic that he's beginning at.
Right, which doesn't really hold out because it's, of course, it's one thing for an island to sink, but for a large, massive piece of an actual continent to sink, it just doesn't hold up with our modern understanding of geology.
Now, he also cited many alleged resemblances between the appearance and cultures of the people of America, Europe, and the Near East, and insisted that, therefore, the civilizations of all must have come from Atlantis. It's like, they're all humans. So,
well, he starts with a good observation. There's something universal here. There are aspects of various cultures that seem to be connected. There's some sort of connective tissue here. What could the reason be? Answer, Atlantis.
Atlantis, instead of saying, like, maybe genetics. But, of course, there's not a great understanding of genetics at that time anyway, so you got to give him a little room. But the problem here is that he completely, I mean, besides coming from this place of logic, he completely ignores Plato's myth, and he replaces it with a variation on the biblical myth of the flood that wiped out everything except for Noah, his family, and his menagerie of animals. He wrote that Atlantis was sunk in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean during the flood. But before all of this, it had given rise to the Egyptian and Mayan civilizations and to blue-eyed, red-haired Aryans of Ireland.
Ah.
Ah, see where you're going there, Donnelly.
So he pulls in a lot of ideas in this theory. He's bringing in the biblical theory. He's bringing in some Irish myth. He's bringing in discoveries about ancient Egyptian beliefs and about Mayan beliefs, and just sort of, again, world building it all into this version of reality that doesn't actually match up with what we know to be true.
Yeah, and think about this time period, too. You have a ton of excavations going on in the late 1800s, and you also have the occultists exploring these more cosmic ideas of how we came to be and these more fantastical ideas. So it was sort of like the perfect story to usher in an expression of all of this. The zeitgeist of the moment, I suppose.
All right, so let's back up just a little bit then. So we've ventured headfirst all the way from scientific to pseudoscientific and into the occult and considering Atlantis. And at that point, we're just lost. We reach, it just turns into pop culture and fiction. An old, I think like 1982 Atari game called Atlantis that I remember seeing the trailers for, in which alien Gorgons battle the Atlanteans. And there was an amazing TV commercial for it. But to back up, let's go back to this this period of time in which we are actually exploring the world, we are exploring the oceans, and we are in fact looking for and expecting to find undiscovered continents. Particularly, we're looking in the Southern Ocean, all right, in the Southern Hemisphere. A lot of the early explorations of this area were actually an attempt to find what was called Terra Australis Incognita. Not really to explore the ocean itself as much. I mean, we did that, but it was simply because there had to be this great undiscovered continent out there. And there are a couple of reasons for this. For instance, there's a religious one, and that is that there's so much land in the Northern Hemisphere that surely a divine creator would not have created an asymmetrical Earth. I mean, forgetting the fact that he apparently created asymmetrical humans, because we're not perfectly symmetrical. But surely he would have made the Earth symmetrical.
So I get it. From a geographical standpoint and from a sort of God worldview standpoint, they're sitting there and they're looking at this landmass and they've mapped what they know. And they think that symmetrically there should be something on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, it's like when we look into the night sky and based on our model of what we know, it's not unbelievable to think, well, there might be other planets out there that have life on them. We just have to sort of fill in the blanks based on the existing model. So.
And this all boils down to Plato and his Platonic ideal yet again.
Oh, wow. Plato emerges once more to populate our world with fictional continents.
Yeah. Now,
scientifically, it's not all just completely based in religion and philosophy, but scientifically, it was also thought that if you had all this land in the north, then there must be land in the south, because otherwise the planet's balance would be disrupted, and it would spin off out into the void of space. And so much of the Earth was unknown, it was simply assumed that there was more land in the south. And again, this doesn't completely line up with the way, obviously, this doesn't line up with the way planetary science works, because we haven't spun off into the void, and there is, in fact, less continental mass in the Southern Hemisphere.
But the idea that they even understood that there was a kind of mass at play is really interesting, and in trying to extrapolate that in a larger view of things. So, in other words, maybe you have a weight, you know, that on one side it's got a bunch of rocks and nothing on the other side, but to get that concept and to try to apply it to geography is really interesting.
Yeah. So we ended up setting out into the Southern Ocean. We eventually discover Antarctica, and we explore all the waters in between. And there is a lot of nothing out there. There's a really great episode of Ideas with Paul Kennedy titled The Godforsaken Sea that really gets into depth about some of our early explorations of the Southern Ocean, but also people who've sailed there, people who've tried to set records sailing around the globe down there. And one of the points that was made in that episode that keeps resonating with me pointed out that you're so far away from civilization down there in the Southern Ocean. In fact, you're further from human habitation than an astronaut on the International Space Station. So think about that the next time you stare at a globe and get this false idea of how well we know everything and how civilized our planet is.
Or if you just feel isolated.
Yes.
You know.
All right, so there you go. That is part one of our two-part series on the idea of the lost continent. This one was very Atlantis-heavy. The next one will be less so. But we'll get into some equally wonderful content, and we will set out for the lost continent of Lemuria.
Ugh, lemurs. Hey, do you guys have any thoughts so far? Let us know. You can find us at stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Yes, that's where you'll find all the podcast episodes, all the videos, all the blog posts. And, you know, there's an old-fashioned way to get in touch with us as well.
Creak, creak, creak. Send an email to blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.